In William's village, the hall stood empty most of the year. This summer, it was taken by a Mr. and Mrs. Bott. William's mother met Mrs. Bott at the vicar's. "Oh, I do hope you'll come and see me, dear," said Mrs. Bott. "And didn't someone say you had a little boy? Oh, do bring him. I want Violet Elizabeth to get to know some nice little children."
Mrs. Brown hesitated. She was aware that none of her acquaintances would have described William as a nice little child.
But Mrs. Bott mistook her speechlessness for consent. "Then you'll come, dearie, and bring the little boysy with you, won't you?"
"Me?" said William indignantly.
"Me? Go to tea with that old girl? Me? Well, she's a nice little girl," said Mrs. Brown weakly. "You must come. She's expecting you."
"I only hope that she won't expect me to talk to her."
"She'll expect you to play with her, I'm sure," said his mother.
"Play? With a girl? Me?" William, pale and proud, dressed in his best suit, his heart steeled to his humiliating fate, went with his mother to the hall the next week.
An overdressed Mrs. Bott was sitting in an over-furnished drawing room. She rose at once with an over-effusive smile. "So you've brought the dear little boy, Z?"
William greeted her coldly and politely, then took his seat and sat like a small statue scowling in front of him. His hair had been brushed back with so much vigour and application of liquid, it looked as if it were painted onto his head. Then Violet Elizabeth entered. Violet Elizabeth's fair hair was not naturally curly, but as the result of great daily labour on the part of her nurse, it stood up in a halo of curls round her small head. Violet Elizabeth's small pink and white face shone with cleanliness. Violet Elizabeth was so treasured and guarded and surrounded with every care that her small pink and white face had never been known to do anything else except shine with cleanliness. But the pièce de résistance about Violet Elizabeth's appearance was her skirts. Violet Elizabeth was dressed in a white lace-trimmed dress with a blue waistband, and beneath the blue waistband, her skirts stood out like a tiny ballet dancer's in a filmy froth of lace-trimmed petticoats. From this cascade appeared Violet Elizabeth's bare legs to disappear ultimately into white silk socks and white buckskin shoes. William gazed at this engaging apparition in horror.
"Good afternoon,"
said Violet Elizabeth primly.
"Afternoon."
"Take the little boysy into the garden, Violet Elizabeth," said her mother, "and play with him nicely." "Come along, boy,"
said Violet Elizabeth, holding out a hand. William ignored the hand, and with the air of a hero bound to his execution, accompanied Violet Elizabeth into the garden. Mrs. Brown's eyes followed them anxiously.
"What's your name?"
said Violet Elizabeth.
She lisped.
She would, thought William bitterly. She would. He felt at any rate relieved that none of his friends could see him in this unmanly situation, talking to a kid like that, all eyes and curls and skirts. "William Brown," he said distantly, looking over her head as if he didn't see her.
"How old are you?"
11.
"My name's Violet Elizabeth."
He received the information in silence.
"I'm 6.
He made no comment.
"Now you must play with me."
William allowed his cold glance to rest upon her.
"I don't play little girls' games," he said scathingly.
But Violet Elizabeth did not appear to be scathed.
"Don't you know any little girls? I'll teach you little girls' games."
"I don't want to. I don't like them. I don't like little girls' games. I don't want to know them."
Violet Elizabeth gazed at him open-mouthed.
"Don't you like little girls?"
she said.
"Me," said William with superior dignity. "Me? I don't know anything about them. I don't want to."
Don't you like me?"
quavered Violet Elizabeth in incredulous amazement. William looked at her. Her blue eyes filled slowly with tears, her lips quivered.
"I like you,"
she said.
"Don't you like me?"
William stared at her in horror.
You do like me, don't you?
William was silent. A large shining tear welled over and trickled down the small pink cheek.
You're making me cry. You are. You're making me cry because you won't say you like me.
No, I do. I do like you. Honest, I do. Don't cry. I do like you. Honest.
A smile broke through the tear-stained face. I'm so glad. You like all little girls, don't you? She smiled at him hopefully. You do, don't you?
William, pirate and red Indian and desperado. William, woman-hater and girl-despiser, looked round wildly for escape and found none. Val Elizabeth's eyes filled with tears again.
You do like all little girls, don't you?
She persisted with quivering lip.
You do, don't you?
It was a nightmare. They were standing in full view of the drawing room window. At any moment a grown-up might appear. He'd be accused of brutality, of making little Violet Elizabeth cry. Beneath his horror, he felt bewildered.
Yes, I do, he said hastily. Yeah, I do, honest, I do.
She smiled again, radiantly, through her tears.
You wish you were the little girl, don't you?
Yes, I'm honest, I do, said the unhappy William.
Kiss me.
William was broken. He brushed her cheek with his.
That's not a kiss,
said Violet Elizabeth.
It's my kind of a kiss, said William.
All right. Now let's play fairies. I'll show you how.
On the way home, Mrs. Brown, who always hoped vaguely that little girls would have a civilising effect on William, asked William if he'd enjoyed it. William had spent most of the afternoon in the character of a gnome, attending upon Violet Elizabeth in the character of the Fairy Queen. He was feeling embittered with life. If all girls are like that, he said, well, when you think of all the hundreds of girls there must be in the world, well, it makes you feel sick. Never had the liberty and the comradeship of his own sex seemed sweeter to William than it did the next day when he set off, whistling carelessly, his hands in his pockets, Jumble at his heels, to meet Ginger and Douglas across the fields. What'll we do this morning? Said Ginger. It was sunny, it was holiday time, they had each other and a dog. Boyhood could not wish for more. The whole world lay before them. Let's go trespassing, said William. Where? Inquired Douglas. Hall Woods and take Jumble. Oh, that old keeper said he'd tell our fathers if he caught us in there again, said Ginger. Let him, said William with a daredevil air, slashing at the hedge with a stick. He was gradually recovering his self-respect. They enter the woods, William leading. He swaggered along the path. Yesterday was a dream, it must have been. He'd never played at fairies with a girl. He, William, the pirate king, the robber chief.
William!
He turned, his proud smile frozen in horror. A small figure was flying along the path behind them, a bareheaded figure with elaborate curls and very short, lacy, bunchy skirts and bare legs with white shoes and socks.
William, darling, I saw you from the nursery window coming along the road, and I escaped. Nurse was reading a book, and I escaped. Oh, William, darling, play with me again, do. It was so nice yesterday.
William glared at her, speechless. He was glad of the presence of his manly friends, yet horrified as to what revelations this terrible young female might make, disgracing him forever in their eyes. Go away, he said sternly at last. We aren't playing little girls' games.
We don't like girls, said Ginger. William does. He said he did. He said he liked all little girls. He said he wished he was a little girl. He kissed me and played fair with me.
A glorious blush of a rich and dark red overspread William's countenance. Oh, he exclaimed, as if astounded at the depth of her untruthfulness. But it was not convincing.
Oh, you did,
said Violet Elizabeth. And somehow that was convincing. Ginger and Douglas looked at William rather coldly. Even Jumble seemed to look slightly ashamed of him.
Well, come along, said Ginger. We can't stop here all day talking to a girl. But I want to come with you. I want to play with you.
We're going to play boys' games. You wouldn't like it, said Douglas.
I like boys' games,
pleaded Violet Elizabeth, and her blue eyes filled with tears.
Please let me come.
All right. Yeah, we can't stop you coming. Don't take any notice of her, he said to the others. She'll soon get tired of it.
And they set off. In a low-lying part of the wood was a bog. The bog was always there, but as it had rained in the night, the bog today was particularly boggy. It was quite possible to skirt this bog by walking round it, but William and his friends never did this. Violet Elizabeth was trotting gaily behind the gallant band. They didn't turn round or look at her, but they couldn't help seeing her out of the corners of their eyes. She plunged into the bog with a squeal of delight and stamped her elegant white-clad feet into the black mud.
Isn't it lovely? Doesn't it feel nice, all squiffy between your toes? It's lovely. I like boys' games.
They couldn't help looking at her when they emerged. As fairy-like as ever above, her feet were covered with black mud up to above her socks. Shoes and socks were sodden.
It's a lovely feeling,
she commented delightedly on the other side.
Let's do it again.
But William and his band remembered their manly dignity and strode on without answering. She followed with short, dancing steps. They came to a clear space in the wood, occupied chiefly by giant blackberry bushes laden with fat, ripe berries. The outlaws fell upon the bushes. Violet Elizabeth also fell upon the bushes. She crammed handfuls of ripe blackberries into her mouth. Gradually, her pink and white face became obscured beneath a thick covering of blackberry juice stain. Her hands were dark red. Her white dress had lost its whiteness. Her bunchy skirts had lost their bunchiness. The brambles tore at her curled hair and drew it into that state of straightness for which nature had meant it. The brambles scratched her face and arms and legs, and still she ate.
I'm getting more than any of you, she cried. And I'm getting all of a mess. Isn't it fun? I like boys' games.
They gazed at her with a certain horrified respect and apprehension. Would they be held responsible for the strange change in her appearance? They set off again through the wood. At a sign from William, they dropped on all fours and crept cautiously along the path. Violet Elizabeth dropped also upon her scratched and blackberry-stained knees.
Look at me! I'm doing it too, just like boys.
Shush, William said fiercely. Violet Elizabeth shushed obediently and for a time crawled along contentedly.
Are we playing being animals?
She piped at last. Shut up, hissed William. Violet Elizabeth shut up, except to whisper to Ginger, who was just in front,
I'm a snail. What are you?
Ginger didn't deign to reply.
At a sign from their leader that all danger was over, the outlaws stood upright. Well, said William, we've thrown them off the scent. But danger surrounds us on every side. We better plunge into the jungle, and I bet she'll soon have had enough of it. They left the path and plunged into the shoulder-high undergrowth. Violet Elizabeth also plunged.
Isn't it fun?
She piped as she followed. Under a large tree, William stopped.
Now we'll be Red Indians, he said, and go hunting. I'll be Braveheart, same as usual, and Ginger be Hawkface, and Douglas be Lightning Eye.
And what shall I be?
Said the torn and stained and wild-headed apparition that had been Violet Elizabeth. Douglas took the matter in hand. What shall I be? He mimicked. What shall I be? What shall I be? Violet Elizabeth did not run home in tears, as he'd hoped she would. She laughed gleefully.
It does sound funny when you say it like that. Oh, it does. Say it again, please. Say it again.
Douglas was nonplussed. Anyway, you are going to play, so there.
Please let me play. Please.
No, go away. William and Ginger secretly admired the fine handling of this female by Douglas.
Please, Douglas.
No. Violet Elizabeth's blue eyes fixed pleadingly upon him and filled with tears. Violet Elizabeth's underlip trembled.
You're making me cry.
A tear traced its course down the blackberry-stained cheek.
If you don't let me play, I'll scream. I'll scream and I'll scream and I'll scream till I'm sick. I can.
Douglas hesitated and was lost. Oh, well, he said.
Oh, thank you, dear Douglas,
said Violet Elizabeth.
What shall I be?
Well, said William to Douglas, now you've let her play, I suppose she better be a squaw.
A squaw? Oh, a squaw? What sort of a noise does it make? A squaw is a Red Indian lady and it don't make any sort of a noise, said Ginger crushingly. Now, we're going out hunting and you stay and cook the supper.
All right. Kiss me goodbye.
Ginger stared at her in horror.
No, but you must. If you're going out to work, you must kiss me goodbye. They do.
I don't, said Ginger. She held up her small face.
Please, Ginger.
Blushing to his ears, Ginger just brushed her cheek with his. William gave a derisive snort. His self-respect had returned. Douglas's manly severity had been overborne. Ginger had been prevailed upon to kiss her. Well, they couldn't laugh at him now. They jolly well couldn't. Both were avoiding his eye.
We'll go off to work now, Douglas, and Ginger, and dear William,
said Violet Elizabeth happily,
and I'll cook the supper.
Gladly, the hunters set off. The Red Indian game had palled. It had been a success while it lasted. Come on, said William. Let's set out looking for adventures. They set off single file as before, Violet Elizabeth bringing up the rear, Jumble darting about in search of imaginary rabbits. Another small bog glimmered ahead. Violet Elizabeth, drunk with her success as a squaw, gave a scream.
Another squishy place! I want to be first.
She flitted ahead of them, ran to the bog, slipped, and fell into it face forward. She arose at once. She was now covered in black mud from head to foot. Her face was a black mud mask. Through it, her teeth flashed in a smile.
I just slipped.
A man's voice came suddenly from the main path through the wood at their right. Look at them, the young rascals. Look at them. And a dog. Blast them. Keepers, said William. Run for your lives, braves. Come on, Jumble. They fled through the thicket.
Oh, please. Please,
gasped Violet Elizabeth in the rear.
I can't run as fast as that.
It was Ginger and Douglas who came back to hold her hands. For all that, they ran fleetly, dashing through the undergrowth where the keepers found it difficult to follow and dodging round trees. At last, breathlessly, they reached a clearing and in the middle of it, a small cottage. The door was open. They could hear the keepers coming through the undergrowth, shouting. In here, gasped William. It looks empty. We'll hide till they've gone. The four ran into a spotlessly clean little kitchen and Ginger closed the door. The cottage was certainly empty. There wasn't a sound.
Isn't it a sweet little house?
Panted Violet Elizabeth. Upstairs, said Douglas. They might look in here. The four, Jumble scrambling after them, clattered up the narrow wooden stairs and into a small bedroom. Look out of the window and see when they go past, commanded William. Then we'll slip out and go back. Douglas peeped cautiously out of the window. He gave a gasp. They're not going past, he said. They're coming in at the door. The men's voices could be heard below. Coming in here, the young rascals. Look at their footmarks. See, what will my old woman say when she gets home?
They've gone upstairs, too. Look at the marks. Blast them.
William went to the window, holding Jumble beneath his arm. We can easily climb down by this drainpipe, he said quickly. Then we'll run back. He swung a leg over the windowsill and prepared to descend with Jumble clinging round his neck, as Jumble was trained to do. Jumble's life consisted chiefly of an endless succession of shocks to the nerves. Ginger and Douglas prepared to follow. The men's footsteps were heard coming upstairs when a small voice said plaintively,
"Please, please, I can't do that. Please, you're not going to leave me, are you?"
William put back his foot. "We can't leave her," he said. Ginger and Douglas did not question their leader's decision. They stood in a row facing the door while the footsteps drew nearer. Into Mr. Bott's library were ushered two keepers, each leading two children by the neck. One held two rough-looking boys, the other held a rough-looking boy and a rough-looking little girl. A dejected-looking mongrel followed the procession. "Trespassin', Mr. Bott, sir," said the first keeper. "Trespassin' and a damaging of the woods. Seen him at it before, sir, but never caught him till now. And a dog, too. It's an example making of, they want, sir. They want prosecuting, if I may make so bold." Mr. Bott cast a harassed glance at the four children. His glance rested upon Violet Elizabeth without the faintest flicker of recognition. He did not recognise this little creature with the torn, stained, bedraggled clothing, whose extremely dirty face could just be seen beneath the tangle of untidy hair that fell over its eyes. She watched him silently and cautiously. Just as he was going to speak, Violet Elizabeth's nurse entered. It says much for Violet Elizabeth's disguise that her nurse only threw her a passing glance. The nurse's eyes were red-rimmed.
"Please, sir, Mrs. Bott says, is there any news?"
No, said Mr. Bott desperately. "Tell her I've rung up the police every minute since she sent last. How is she?"
"Please, sir, she's in hysterics again,"
Mr. Bott groaned.
"Please, sir, she says she's too ill to speak now. She told me to tell you so, sir."
Suddenly, Mr. Bott turned to the four children and their keepers. You've got their names and addresses, haven't you? Well, see here, children. Go out and see if you can find my little gal for me. She's lost. Look in the woods and round the village and everywhere, and if you find her, I'll let you off. See?" They murmured perfunctory thanks and retired, followed by Violet Elizabeth, who had uttered not one word. In the woods, they turned on her sternly. "It's you he wants, you're her."
"Yes,"
agreed the tousled ragamuffin who was Violet Elizabeth.
"It's me."
"Well, we're going to find you and take you back."
"Oh, please, I don't want to be found and taken back. I like being with you."
"Well, we can't keep you about with us all day, can we?" argued William. "You've got to go home sometime, same as we've got to go home sometime. And we jolly well want our dinner now. We're jolly well going home, and we're jolly well going to take you home."
"All right,"
agreed Violet Elizabeth, holding up her face.
"If you'll all kiss me, I'll be found and took 'em back."
The four of them stood again before Mr. Bott's desk. William and Ginger and Douglas took a step back, and Violet Elizabeth took a step forward. "We found her," said William.
Where?
Said Mr. Bott, looking round.
"It's me,"
piped Violet Elizabeth. Mr. Bott started.
You?
"Yes, Father, it's me."
But God bless my soul, it's impossible.
Then he rang for Violet Elizabeth's nurse.
"Is this Violet Elizabeth?" he said.
"Yes, it's me."
Violet Elizabeth's nurse pushed back the tangle of hair.
"Oh, the poor, poor child," she cried. "The poor child.
But God bless my soul. Take her away. I don't know what you do to her, but do it and don't let her mother see her till it's done.
And you boys, you stay here."
"Oh, my lamb,"
sobbed Violet Elizabeth's nurse as she led her away.
"My poor lamb."
In an incredibly short time, they returned. The mysterious something had been done. Violet Elizabeth's head was a mass of curls. Her face shone with cleanliness. Dainty, lace-trimmed skirts stuck out, ballet dancer-wise, beneath the pale blue waistband. Mr. Bott took a deep breath.
"Right, now fetch your mother.
like a tornado entered Mrs. Bott. She still heaved with hysterics. She enfolded Violet Elizabeth to her visibly palpitating bosom. Oh, my child! Oh, my darling child!
I was a squaw. It doesn't make any sort of noise. It's a lady. How did you...
These boys found her, said Mr. Bott.
Oh, how kind, how noble,
said Mrs. Bott.
Oh, at once that nice little boy who played with her so sweetly yesterday. Give them 10 shillings each, Botty. Botty!
Screamed Mrs. Bott tearfully.
Botty, don't you value your darling child's life at even 30 shillings?
Hastily, Mr. Bott handed them each a 10-shilling note. The outlaws tramped homewards by the road.
Well, it's turned out all right,
said Ginger, fingering the 10-shilling note in his pocket. But it might not have. Except for the money, it jolly well spoilt the morning. Girls always do, said William. I'm not going to have anything to do with any old girl ever again. It's all very well saying that, said Douglas,
who'd been deeply impressed that morning by the inevitableness and deadly persistence of the sex.
It's all very well saying that. It's them what has to do with you.
And I'm never going to marry any old girl, said William.
It's all very well saying that, said Douglas again, gloomily. But some old girl will probably marry you. Thank you.